Der heilige Mai Prümischlander hat Amul gesucht.
Wir beugen euch allein an, allein an.
Chodsch des Mann agile ist noch nicht du. Aber ich beugen euch allein an, allein an. Die Bunde ist ein Leilam, Schellam. Chodsch des Mann, der Gehirle ist noch nicht du. Aber die Bunde ist ein Leilam, Schellam.
Bis in Kretschme darf man noch abdrehen. Wa de größe Gules ist der Gunischkrieg.
Eure Beine, Scherleilam, Scherleilam. Ui bisse Kretschme darf man auch ertrink. Wa de größe Gules ist der Gunischkrieg. Die Beine,
the meaning of the words in this song are as follows. The holy rabbi, Reb Meir from Premishlang, once said, Master of the universe, of the world, though the messianic era has yet to arrive, but master of the universe. Up until the pub, we also need a drink, because the enormity of the exile is nothing but easy. These words are both poetic and beautifully distinct in their Hasidic nature. They are a sublime and heartfelt expression that portrays a multitude of things. On the one hand, it speaks to our sometimes grueling struggle with life here on earth. It also speaks of our longing and waiting for our redemption. It's an analogy about life. Though the redemption isn't here yet, which when it will be here, will embody a time when we effortlessly serve God. But until then, we need assistance. We need assistance in getting close to you, Hashem. We need help in feeling you. We need help in getting to you. Alternatively, there's another way to look at it, another part. It's not just that I'm going to the bar to drink my pain away and to cope with my hardships. It's that I need a drink to get there. I need to pregame. In other words, we're oftentimes so lost before we've even begun our journey. Or you could say the journey is so difficult that I need to get effed up just to play the game. I'm so far gone. It's so tremendously difficult. These sentiments are relatable to everyone. Understandable to all, intuitively. They require no explanation, no chumash, rashi, mishnayos. It is a form of truth that is understood through experience, not through evidence. Any individual who has roamed planet Earth for long enough can relate, will relate. This song is a stunning example how so few words can mean so many things. But that's not always the case. In our next case study, we will analyze a discussion where we will see an example of what it looks like when many words mean so little. While listening to an interview between Zev Brenner, Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, and Jake Turks, I found myself jumping out of my seat when Jake said one of the dumbest things imaginable. Let's go at it together. To preface, this is on the topic of Neturei Karta. Recently, they've been in the limelight because we're dealing with the Israel-Gaza war, the Israel-Hamas war, and naturally any time that the Jews are going up against their enemies, you have Neturei Karta that lusts for attention as well, so they stick themselves into the middle of it.
You're listening to Talk Line with Zev Brenner, America's premier Jewish broadcast on the air since 1981.
And now, here's your host.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Zev Brenner. People for years have been talking to me, and we've had quite a few programs about Neturei Karta. They're an anti-Israel Zionist group. that shows up at every rally. They support the Palestinian. They support Hamas. They've gone to Iran. They were recently in Iran, too. They were there at a Holocaust denying conference, one on Gaza. Every enemy of Israel they're with. So the question is, are they Jewish or not? Because they look like Jews. They daven. But on Shabbos, they're there demonstrating with anarchists against Israel, against the United States. Are they Jewish? Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson joined us. He's a popular lecturer, educator. He's a former Chosef of Lubavitcher Rebbe, former editor of the Allgemeiner Journal. And Jake Turks is a senior White House correspondent for Ami Magazine, a political contributor for Newsmax. Thank you for joining us. So, good luck.
Thank you, Reb Zev. A good luck. Nice to be back on your show.
So, he's just giving some intros. Jake Turks, never heard of him until I saw him on this interview. Apparently, he's a White House spokesperson of some sort. I don't know. Doesn't even matter. Doesn't matter what your position is. If you lack brains and intelligence, you'll get roasted.
Hello again.
Good to have you, both of you, back. So, let me begin with you, Rabbi. Thank you too, Jake. I know Jake also been over. Right, go
ahead. I'm surrounded by my heroes. This is the greatest Matzah Shabbos of a very long time. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate that. So good to have a frank discussion, because I saw Rabbi Y.Y. Jacob, you pretty much were on record saying that the Neturei Karta, those anti-Zionist small fringe group, which small numbers. People keep asking all Shabbos, how many are there? I said maybe they're in the 100, maybe 1,000 or 2 around the world. Not a big number, but they make a lot of noise. But you, Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, recently said they're not.
We're not going to listen to this whole thing. Obviously, this is 1.5 hours long. I'm just going to cut to the important parts. But I will say, so he gives the intro, discusses it briefly. When I was listening to this, I came in with zero bias. Zero preconceptions about anyone or anyone's opinion. Since I never listened to Jake Turks, I didn't know where he's coming from. And me and my father are sitting and listening to this, and I noticed what Jake Turks was doing, the angle he was coming at it from, but I didn't want to believe it. I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. At first I thought, and I told my father, I'm like, maybe he's just playing devil's advocate. My father right away was like rolling his eyes like, oh my God, this dude's out of his mind. And I'm like thinking to myself, no, maybe he's just playing devil's advocate. Perhaps he's trying to play the role of an intellectual who's playing devil's advocate. So he's raising, you know, he's trying to strengthen some of the arguments so that it's an interesting conversation. And then I realize, no, he's actually an apologist to a certain degree. He veiled his apologetics in an attempt at playing devil's advocate and being an intellectual, but it becomes clear very quickly that he's actually ignorant. And that what I initially thought was wrong. So they start out by speaking. Y.Y. Jacobson had recently, before this video, said something along the lines of, like, they're not Jewish. So when he gets questioned about it by Zev Brenner, he backtracks and says he meant it more emotionally. How can you wrap your head around the fact that Torah Jews, people who put on tefillin and go to the mikvah, are hugging the enemy? It would be akin to a Hasidic guy hugging Hitler, right? It's so unfathomable that he didn't mean it from a DNA perspective. So anyway, they go back and forth on some of those comments. Y.Y. Jacobson, by the way, is mega, mega brain in the Torah world. Super intellectual. It was sweet for them to go easy on Jake Turks when he said the absolute dumbest thing on this episode. I imagine that Y.Y. Jacobson is, first of all, humble. He's also used to people sharing dumb opinions, but I don't think when it comes to topics like these, they should be ignored. I think it's almost duty to call out something that is this crass. So after Y.Y. Jacobson finishes expressing, you know, his perspective on the matter and how horrible it is, blah, 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 Jake Turks starts playing devil's advocate.
Rising. I also heard this from Jews. Unfathomable to me as well, but at least they don't speak in the name of Torah. They speak in the name of far, far extreme leftist radical ideology, which is also sickening. And it's some sickness or trauma that some Jews have. But a Jew with a beard goes to the mikveh, puts on tefillin. What a disgrace to us. What a disgrace.
Go ahead, Jake. You were going to say something.
Sure. First of all, I just want to be very clear that there's some kind of a pace malfunction here as a result of the lighting. My pace are still low, like down till here, but sometimes it doesn't show up on the green screen. So to anybody watching, you don't have to get too nervous.
Watch us on YouTube. We're on YouTube. It's live as we're talking.
Yes. So he starts out by expressing that he wants you to know that his payas are long. Just in case you were feeling like he's going OTD or you're getting worked up because he cut his payas, he didn't. It's just a green screen problem.
Looking right now.
Watching the live stream, right. First of all, it's quite fathomable. I mean, it's gullus for them too. We're all struggling to try to make sense of the Ikvah Sidah Mashiach HaSan. Some people have a different way of expressing it than we do. I'd like to quote a very chashuv individual, a Rav, Lubavitcher Chassid actually, and I would like to get Rabbi Jacobson's take on this particular quote. He says, the Jewish people need to love each other. Love, love, love. We need to bring back that beautiful thing called Ahava. If you don't believe me, ask Hamas. And then he goes on to say how Hamas didn't differentiate between how religious a Jew was, what their levels of observance were. First of all, what are your thoughts about this quote? And would you say that this extends to Nitori Karta as well? The mitzvah to love them, to love people that might not always be easy to love.
I'll tell you, I think in the talk that I gave that went viral, I think at the end I said that I can have compassion for them, but their views are lethal and poisonous because you're dealing about an issue of pikuach nefesh. In other words, I understand that people's traumas and people's indoctrination and brainwashing and sometimes are misguided brings them to have views that are very, very painful. But I have to say that certain views must not be tolerated because the price for those views is putting lives in danger. So I think we have to make a very, very clear distinction. Some views are simply dangerous. Supporting Stalin, which many Jews did. My parents and grandparents came from Soviet Russia. Millions of Jews supported Joseph Stalin, Lenin. Trotsky himself was Jewish. It turned into the greatest hell of modern history. So we have to be very, very careful because some views are just, they are so toxic. They're simply dangerous. And I think part of being allergic to evil and obsessed by good is to be able to make hamavdil, being kodesh lechel, to be able to make distinctions and say, this is a voice of destruction. This is a voice of poison. This is not a personal vendetta against any individual. I think this is very critical, especially in a time like today, when we speak about Avos Yisrael, when we speak about unity, but it must be based on an underlying common denominator that you and I care for Jewish life. We love our people. We love our nation. We may have arguments. We all have arguments, let's face it. We have many differences of opinion. I think when we cross a certain red line to be able to visit the mullahs, the ayatollahs in Iran, to be able to smile and take photographs with people who want to see, who promise that the whole Israel will be annihilated in one day, literally quoting Haman in the Megillah, and not in one day, with nuclear energy in 1 second. They would love to see 7 million Jews lay lifeless. So I think every fiber in our being needs to be outraged by those views that are just horrific and poisonous.
Isn't there a pasuk that those that hate God, you're supposed to hate? I can't remember the exact
pasuk. Yahweh Hashem.
Yeah, that's it.
Ra, we say it every Friday night.
Is that applied to the Nitori Karta?
I think there's a point. There's a point. You know, the word hatred has become a very bad word in our vocabulary in the 21st century. And everybody who knows me, I'm sometimes guilty of that. You know, people say, oh, Rabbi, why love, 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 love.
Yeah, by the way, that quote that I said before was from you. You said that in that same drasha.
That quote that I said was from you. You hear this guy? Now, my first impression was, okay, slightly disrespectful. You know, if you have a quote from a person, there's a way to frame a conversation in a respectful, straightforward manner. He almost did this in a political manner to one-up him. Oh, by the way, the quote that I did, it's from you. Like, haha, I got you. When people come into intellectual conversations, you know, on offense, you're already off to a bad start. Now, this is very, very passive, you know, as you would, you know, think of it as like passive aggressive. It's not necessarily aggressive, but it's very passive by nature. But it gives you a bit of an inkling of what's really brewing beneath the formality of this conversation.
Honored.
About bringing back the beautiful thing called Ahava, which I don't think means loving people that we already love, right? That's not a chiddush. Loving people that we have a lot of common ground with, loving people that we daven in the same shul as, we eat by the same kedeshim, I don't think that is the mitzvah, right? The mitzvah of kashrus is not when it's easy, it's when it's hard. The mitzvah of Shabbos is not when it's easy, it's when it's hard.
So his premise is, and this is what he's bringing to the table, he wants to play devil's advocate for Neturei Karta. Really what it appears, and I know nothing about this dude, it appears that he's a Satmarer that shares some sentiment with Neturei Karta, and in order for him to sleep well at night, to justify the beliefs that intersect, he's rationalizing their behavior, or trying to at least, so that he doesn't have to reconcile it. I apologize, my voice, I'm sick, so it's very difficult for me to do this right now, but let's keep plowing along. If I had to judge what's taking place here, psychologically, he's trying to make sense of a type of behavior that he perhaps finds within himself. Why? Because otherwise I don't see a need to do that. 99% of Jewry across the board have no problem calling out Neturei Karta for what they are, an extremist fringe group that nobody agrees with. If you're a Orthodox Jew and you feel the need to protect them on any level, there has to be a reason you're doing so. Pretending to be an intellectual is not a good enough reason.
Isn't the mitzvah of Ahava also dafka when it's hard? Aren't the people who we are the most inclined to hate the ones that we need to love the most or to work the hardest to try to love?
Yeah, so it's wonderful to say that this inner soul of Neturei Karta, they have, if they're Jewish and they have a Jewish soul and you want to love them.
Why would you say if they're Jewish? Forget the thousand or hundreds, however many there are. They have relatives. They're from relatives that are not doing what they're doing. And when someone is mochi laz on whether they're Jewish, what does it say about all their relatives? I don't think this is a very pashut thing to just say speculatively, because we feel that their hashkafas are krum.
But let me ask this, Jake. Are they acting Jewish? One of the worst sins of being a Jew.
Whatever. So they waste some time on the technicality of whether they're Jewish or not, which doesn't even matter. It's so common in this world that we hate, we find something that's reprehensible, like Neturei Karta's behavior, and we need to, say, come up with a theory to make sense of it. No, we don't have to. They're Jewish and they're fucking assholes. End of story. They're Jewish and they're as radical as progressive lefties. It Jewish doesn't mean anything. Anyone can convert to Judaism, and there are every type of Jew under the sun. So this notion as if being Jewish automatically means something, just the opposite. You see here, ultra-Orthodox, ultra-ultra-Orthodox Jews, a large group of them, the entire Neturei Karta, it shows you that you could be, you know, at the pinnacle and also yet at the same time be so far.
And God forgave us. When Jews spoke badly about the land, they received the death sentence from God, correct? So that one of the worst sins you do is against Eretz Yisrael, against Israel. And here they're not only going against Israel, they're siding with people who have Jewish bloods on them. How could you kiss somebody? Can you imagine kissing Hitler and saying what a great person he is? And this is what
by the way, you'd be surprised. There were Jews who supported Hitler. And there were two camps of Jews that supported Hitler. There were frum Jews who said, hey, listen, we're totally on board with you guys with the whole...
What about supporting Hitler in 1945? What would you say?
I don't know how many people were around to even like ask.
His intelligence is lacking greatly, and it shows itself the more he speaks. It was at this point where I'm still like, no, maybe he's, you know... But then I realized like it just continues to deteriorate as you go along. There were Jews who supported Hitler, he says, meaning before the war. Okay, so therefore what? So you're saying Hamas, you're comparing Hitler to Hamas, and you're saying Neturei Karta are like those people who supported Hitler? So you're not even defending anything. So you're just plain out saying that they're wrong. Unless you're going to tell me that you believe that those who supported Hitler were right. Zero weight to anything coming out of his mouth.
Exactly.
No. I get it. But here's a question. When you, like, what is your impression of...
I am shocked that you're not as outraged as I am. I'm quite shocked.
I'm outraged, I'm pained. But this is not, I'm not disagreeing. I'm turning to you, Rav Jacobson. If you could help me understand what my responsibility as a Frum Yid is with regards to loving someone who, quite frankly, let's just say I feel very triggered by, right?
Okay. This is very common in Judaism, especially Orthodoxy, when you're being bittul. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. It says I need to love everyone. And here I'm triggered by a group of people, so I don't know how to deal with it. It's this overdependence and overindulgence in running to the rabbi, running to the rav, and asking every halachic detail that is quite frankly wrong, and it was never intended to be that way. Either Jake Turks is playing a stupid game of devil's advocate, and this is his mode of going about it, or Jake Turks is the type of guy that runs to the rabbi to ask them if the tissues he's using on Pesach need to be kosher to Pesach, and what hand he should use to wipe his rear end. I don't think he's that type of person. I think he's portraying a stereotype that all Orthodox Jews are familiar with in an attempt to sound like an intellectual who's playing devil's advocate, but there is a possibility that he's the gopher, the guy who runs to the rabbi every 2 minutes because he doesn't know how to live his life. But I do want to say on that, use your goddamn brains, okay? God gave you brains and intellect. Use it. The point of Judaism, the point of guidance, the point of halacha, the point of mussar, is to help you learn how to use your brains. In fact, the mental faculties that it instills in you, that it provides you with, is supposed to help you operate on an optimal level. It's supposed to help you function as a superhuman. If everything you're learning is making you confused, you don't know how to make a clear, concise, and precise decision when something's so blatantly wrong. If you don't know how to differentiate between right and wrong, white and black, if black is kind of gray to you, then there's something wrong with you. You need to not run to the rabbi to ask him how to behave. You need to open up some books, start learning and learn how to think, learn about right and wrong again, learn morals, learn ethics.
Do I not have?
We all feel triggered by people. You may be triggered by me. I may be triggered by you. We're triggered by friends and neighbors, spouses and kids. And that's part of Avodas Hashem, to work through our middos. But this is not about being triggered, my dearest friend. It's not about being triggered because I'm traumatized or you're traumatized, or because we have big egos, or because we have small egos, or because we have too much confidence or too little confidence, or because I'm too selfish or I'm not selfish, and I got to work through my middos. That's the avoda of all of us every single day with our spouses and our children and our friends and our family and our neighbors and our partners and strangers. Yes, I'm with you. That's the avoda of Hashem, to work on our egos and to open ourselves up to diversity.
Can I be down the cusp for a second?
Go ahead.
All right, now we move to being down with Kapschos.
I know this is not a very popular position to be taking, but I believe that we should at least try to have an open dialogue about this.
Yeah.
And Zev, thank you so much for this opportunity. I really appreciate it, and I'm honored that you're coming on. Absolutely.
I just want to say he mentioned open dialogue. A lot of people confuse the notion of having an opening for dialogue for not having a backbone. Having open dialogue does not mean that we have to play devil's advocate, give everyone a platform, compromise on our ethics and morals for the sake of understanding another side. That's not what open dialogue means.
I love coming on. Here's my cosmos. First of all, you're talking about their sheetus. I mean, let's maybe we should try. I don't know the sheetahs very well, but I think I have like maybe I'm a level one in understanding what the sheetahs are. But you mentioned that their views are dangerous, right? So I'm going to ask one question, then I'm going to make a statement, then I'm going to let you respond. First, my first question is, what do you think they were doing on October 7th? Do you believe that they were celebrating, or do you believe that they were devastated and
notice what took place here. This is important. You see, a person could only hide their agenda so far, because if you're going to have dialogue with intelligent people, they're going to push you into a corner and you're going to end up pulling out everything that you have. The conversation started not about Neturei Karta Shitas, what their exact beliefs are, what they aren't. And Jake Turks, pretending to be neutral, he just didn't know how to make sense of it. They're 15, 18 minutes into this conversation, and here Jake Turks wants to start introducing the Shitas, their actual ideas. Now think about what I said earlier about who I think he might be and what his objective actually is.
Crushed and saying, oh, if only the Yidden listened to us and left Eretz Yisrael, all of these things wouldn't have happened. Not that that's a realistic position, but do you really feel that they're happy when Yidden are getting killed, or are they very pained and that's what's driving them to double down on Shitas that they've been born into, grandfathered into?
So this is where I started realizing, okay, this is not somebody playing devil's advocate. This is someone who's straight up not intelligent, making horrible arguments. He raises the question, what do you think Neturei Karta were doing on October 7th? Do you think they were celebrating? First of all, relevance. It's irrelevant. The same as it's irrelevant what I was doing on October 7th. If I go on October 10th and I say, good job, Hamas, it doesn't matter what I did on October 7th. If Neturei Karta is literally there hugging Hamas leaders, it doesn't matter what they did on October 7th.
Pained, and that's what's driving them to double down on Shitas that they've been born.
October 7th happens. He's proposing that they've been pained. They were so pained by what they saw on October 7th, so they're doubling down on what they've been indoctrinated in. Can somebody please explain to me what that point, like the Shaykhs, what? But no, like this is just
born into, grandfathered into, that they can't really, they don't feel like they have the authority to say that my Zaydas were wrong and now we're going to.
If an event could ever make you change your mind, wouldn't October 7th be that event? You're literally making an argument, but in the reverse, and it's actually hurting his case, but he doesn't realize that he's doing that.
Change our view of the Torah. But that's one thing. The statement I want to make is talking about Ritzicha. Let's say, see, for someone living in Brooklyn or in Lakewood, it's a position that I understand and makes sense for them. But for someone like me, who I spend almost every week I'm in Washington, I cannot don't see a frumid outside when I'm davening, right? And I have to pass these people, the protesters, the pro-Palestinian protesters, not the Neturei Karta. They're not there every day.
It was at this point when I was watching the first, I'm like, no, don't go there, don't go there. I kind of predicted what he was about to say. And I was just like, please don't, because it's about to be a nursery IQ thing to say. Oh, yeah. And he said it.
I have to pass them on the way to the White House. And now let's say they look at me and they say, you know what? I would love to beat up this Jew, but on the off chance that maybe he's in a Neturei Karta, I'm just going to leave him alone. I mean, doesn't it happen that from Jews are in places where an Arab or a pro-Palestinian, whatever, would say, oh, I hate this guy, I want to beat him up. But because he feels this connection with the Neturei Karta, now he won't. So.
Bizn kretschme daf me no chatrink. Oi, Jake. Looking at you on the screen, I don't know if I want to slap you or give you a huge hug. You're like a little teddy bear.
So who really is to say that what they're doing? And is Hamas consulting with them? Would the October 7th attack look any different if Neturei Karta wasn't doing what they're doing? So
what the fuck is this guy talking about? He just says shit? I don't know what he's a spokesperson for, but Jesus Christ, somebody get this guy off the stage.
In what way are they contributing to Ritzicha? And I guess the second question is, could a case be made that maybe it's not completely evil what they're doing? Maybe there is some kind of a benefit to some people. And then the third question about, okay, you know what? Let's just stick with these two.
Okay, you know what? It's okay. We don't even have to listen to the responses. So first of all, I was thinking right then and there, like, YY Jacobson, obviously they shoot down his nursery level argument that maybe it's a good thing because I have to go to DC, and if somebody sees me, they might think I'm Notary Carta, so they're not gonna, you know, start a fight with me because they sympathize with Notary Carta. They shot that down. Obviously, nothing. That's not even a conversation. So it was irrelevant. I thought they were very nice to him, being that that was the case, being that he said that, because he deserves to be torn to shreds for saying something so utterly stupid and immature. He moves to this to his next question, which is finding the good in something. This notion that you could find the good in everything, right? This is where I begin to think that he genuinely doesn't know how to think, doesn't know how to process things. Maybe he has a lot of information, but he's not wise. You could be knowledgeable and not wise. You need wisdom in this world. You need to know how to use your information. So maybe this guy learned, maybe he knows some things, but he seems to not know what to do with the things he's learned. Again, either he's playing devil's advocate or he runs to the rabbi to ask them how to do things, how to make sense of the information that he has. Is it true that in any situation you could find a good, because it's all relative? Absolutely. I could go next door, murder my neighbor, and then the people who are cheering for a more greener planet could say that the good in me murdering my neighbor is that he's no longer creating emission of any sorts. He's using less gasoline, so it's good for the planet. Yippee, I found something good in my murder. Understand, these are nursery level arguments. They shouldn't really even be taking place. When there are serious things to discuss, you shouldn't be having low-level conversations like these. The big conversation is Hamas did what they did. The conversation after that in this particular setting is that Notary Carta are cozying up to Hamas. So it's reprehensible. If you can't come to a clean, clear, and precise determination, right and wrong, on these behaviors, as I said earlier, you need to go back, open up a book, get more educated, learn about morality and ethics. Let me help you understand how simple this phenomenon really is. Staying alive and truth are meshed together like this. The inyan of MS, the notion of truth, the idea of truth, and the notion and idea of survival are very meshed together. Okay? Try to process this. This is a little philosophical. It's not a complicated idea, though. There are very rare occasions when there are exceptions to that rule. So, if you have an idea about what you think is right, okay, before I go there, let me say one more thing. Right and wrong, right is also very enmeshed with truth. Because when you say something is right versus wrong, you're insinuating that it's true. Again, with rare exceptions, something could be right but not true. Okay, so just think of those as two models. Survival and truth are meshed together. Right, being right, and truth are meshed together. Each one of those, in rare exceptions, is it outside of that nature. So, if you have an idea that you think is right, for example, if you're an extreme progressive lefty, and you think that Israel should rip their fences out, rip the border out, there should be no border, open air prison. And that's your idea. That's your inyan. You think that's right. That's good. Right, good. Good is also meshed with truth. But that leads to people dying. Then by default, you're wrong. You were wrong. Your idea is wrong. It's false. Much closer to Sheker. Okay, this is a very, very simple concept. If Notary Carta holds an idea that would get them killed, their idea is wrong. And almost everyone in this world understands that. 1 + 1 = 2. So it doesn't matter what Naturae Carta thinks. It doesn't matter what they say. They are wrong. By virtue of the fact that if they had their way and things went their way, they would be dead. How do we know this? Because the progressive left, Hamas cheerleaders, and everyone who supports those savage, barbaric subhumans, like the people who lived near Gaza, many of them, not all, were killed. The people outside of Gaza, the peace-loving hippies, those who thought you could have peace with somebody who wants to kill you, they're dead now. By virtue of that fact, their idea is wrong. Naturae Carta is wrong. Anyone who believes those ideas is also wrong. The only reason they're not dead is because they're not there, or it wasn't implemented. In other words, take Naturae Carta. They support Palestine. Okay, so give Israel to the Arabs. Make it Palestine. Stick Naturae Carta in there. Let them be diaspora Jews in Palestine. They're dead. It's not a conversation. They're dead. It's in the Hamas charter. They want to kill every Jew, every Westerner, all infidels. It's not a question. Okay, in this manner, you begin to see survival and truth go hand in hand. If you hold ideas that get you dead, they're not good ideas. They're not true ideas. It's not difficult, therefore, to determine that it doesn't matter if they're Jews, not Jews, it doesn't matter who they are. If they hold such ideas, they support. Now, let's go to the next level. If they hold such ideas, they're wrong. End of that conversation. Let's talk about their support. If you go to the next level and you want to talk about the fact that they support Hitler, they support those who literally just butchered us, not only are they wrong morally, they're traitors. It would be no different than in biblical times having spies. They are literally on the same level as those who did it. There's no differentiation. They are that exception. They are the exception to some of the halachas that tell you that you need to love and find the positive and everything, blah, 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 blah. They are that exception. Without running to the rabbi and asking him, you should have enough of a moral compass to understand that. That is what learning Jewish ethics, that is what learning Musar, and that is what learning Jewish outlook is supposed to give you, a brain that works, that could determine these things. When you have a cruel, and I mean a cruel enemy like Hamas, and they go and slaughter over 1,000 Jews, and they would do that to every single Jew, and then you have someone who supports them, or a group like Naturae Carta, an entire group who supports them, there is now no difference between Hamas and Naturae Carta. They are equally punishable by death, morally. I'm not saying we have the legal precedents to do anything like that. Obviously, we don't. If it was in biblical times, sure, they'd be hung in a second. No questions asked. When you have moral clarity, when you know where your morality comes from, you don't doubt these things. There's no moral quandary about it. They are the enemy. It doesn't matter if they're Jewish. They are the enemy. They're a fringe extremist group. They represent no one and nothing. They are only getting a lot of attention now because of the subject matter. But make no mistake, if hardcore Satmarers want to associate with that in any way, shape, or form, they'll become the enemy too. But one should have no doubts about this. We are in a kill or be killed era, time of our life, for the Jews especially. Pontificating, yapping about, yammering on about ideas that could get you killed, distract you, or let your guard down is very dangerous. You want to have these conversations? You should have had them a few years ago when things were calm. Maybe, Bezrat Hashem, with Hashem's infinite grace, if everything calms down over the next few years, you want to have those conversations then? Have them. In life, we need to be prepared for when shit hits the fan. Well, guess what? Shit hit the fan. This is when you act. You don't have conversations about stupidity. you act. All the learning you did, the moral compass you have, now is when you use it. This is when you execute. When somebody comes to kill you, when somebody intends to kill you, you are obligated. Chiyuv, Sanhedrin, 72 AB. Somebody comes to kill you, you rise up and you kill them first. Hamas, and subsequently a large portion of the world, is literally before our eyes rising up to kill us. There should be no moral quandaries. Get up and fight. Understand who your enemy is. Execute. Somebody pulls out a knife, pull out a sword, and start slicing heads. You want to have conversations? That was for yesterday or tomorrow, not today. Loving your neighbor is only applicable if you're alive. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. You can't do any of that if you're dead. So truth number one is survival. That's truth. Stay alive. We talked about some exceptions. For example, how many people were slaughtered because they didn't want to convert? You should have no other idols. So if you're forced to bow down or die, Kiddush Hashem, you die, and many have. These are exceptions to this rule that survival and truth go in hand. Sometimes you have to allow yourself to be killed for that truth. But this is not one of those times. If Neturei Karta feels that this is one of those times, let them go kill themselves with Hamas. Let them go on the front lines. For us, this is not one of those times. We need to stay alive to fight this fight. We need to stay alive to have an opinion. In any event, him, along with many others, are trying to complicate a very simple, straightforward matter. It's a very black and white matter, indeed. In Judaism, it's very easy to fall for the whole, I'm unsure how to deal with this because of halacha and because it tells us this. And it's the same thing that the world is doing right now on a global scale. We saw right away what happened October 7th. Within a day or two, there's already stories making things up. Maybe Hamas didn't kill 1,200. Maybe the IDF killed 700 of their own and Hamas only killed 600. Maybe Hamas didn't rape any women and chop any heads off. Maybe So we start with you start picking apart, and I watch the world do this. I want to vomit because this massacre happened in my backyard. For those who kind of watched it happen as it was happening online or in person, you know exactly what happened. It was right there. Then everyone comes online and the conspiracies and the stories and the al-achas kama v'kamas and everything starts then. And now we're watching the same thing when people talk about Neturei Karta. Up and down, the guys, it's very simple. Somebody killed us, that butchered us, our enemy. Now you have a group of people hugging that enemy. They're the enemy now. That's it. It's that simple. If you can't wrap your head around that, you're going to die. If not today, then tomorrow. One thing we've seen, b'derech teva, by the course of nature, Hashem created a world that doesn't falter. I don't know how to explain it. It's rock solid. With such rare exceptions, nothing goes outside of nature, outside of teva. One thing that has always been unforgiving is miscalculating and misunderstanding when it was a time to act and being prepared to protect yourself, being prepared to make these types of decisions, being prepared to execute, to defend yourself. Doesn't matter what you believe. You could put on tefillin every single day, toivel in the mikvah. You could be in a Neturei Karta. You could believe all kinds of BS. It will not absolve you of dying by your enemy's sword if you miscalculated, if you had stupid ideas. So my solution is don't have stupid ideas. When your enemy tells you that they want to kill you, believe them. When your enemy is sitting quietly, don't think that they're afraid of you. Understand that they're sitting and planning, strategizing how to kill you. This is the time to act. This is not next time. This is it. My point is, your religious beliefs, your extremism on either side, it's not going to save you. You could have all kinds of messianic ideas about what's happening, what's got, ba 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 ba. You know what happened? 30 minutes down the road, hundreds of our enemies walked through the border, went from house to house, town to town, slaughtering people. That factually took place. That will factually keep taking place for as long as we're alive and as long as we have enemies who want to kill us. That was factual. Ideas, what will bring peace. Ideas, philosophy, stories, narratives. It's all irrelevant. This is kill or be killed. And if you walk around like Jake Turks, confused about how he should treat his fellow Jew who's hugging Hitler, you will die. It's not a question, you will. And by you, I don't mean you, I'm not threatening you, you'll die. What you represent will die. And you'll die quick, and you'll die the first. You know who survives? Those who didn't occupy those fantasies. Those who weren't confused. You know who survived on October 7th? The towns that had guns. The towns that understood right away were under attack. There were very few, two or three, 5, 6, or 7 hour shootouts. The guy told his wife, this is what we've been training for. There for 7 hours, holding off Hamas, saved the entire town and his family, and he died. That's who survives. People with ideas, people who don't know how to judge the situation. Oh, I wonder who that is. Oh, it's a Hamas guy with an RPG. Should I run? But I read once in a book that if I run, then he'll see me, so then he'll aim it in front. This is basically what we're doing here. Let's have a conversation. Somebody's about to kill me. Maybe he's a good Hamas guy. Maybe Natori Karta are good. Maybe they're coming at it from an angle that really they're just victims and they're sad for everyone who died and they don't want anyone to. There's no room for any of that. Kill or be killed. Get your brains on straight or you're going to die. If not you, your kids, what you represent, your ideas, so on and so forth. Jake Turks, your ideas are shit. And hopefully you could rethink your position on all this stupidity. And I hope that you represent nobody in the White House, in the Jewish world, because it's frightening if you do. Thank you for listening. And for those who know, I don't typically rip apart individual people. But again, this is kill or be killed. And that was a public conversation. I don't typically make it my business to rip apart people's stupidity because it's not kill or be killed. What do I care if somebody says something dumb? You see something online, cool, whatever, fine. People have dumb opinions. When we're talking about survival, and that's kind of what YY Jacobson was trying to say, if you watch the whole interview, when you're talking about the survival, when we're talking about survival, there's zero room, zero margin for error. We can't miscalculate things. If we miscalculate things, we're dead. So there's no room for ideas like Jake Turks is promoting. So if there are any Jews walking around with low IQ, stupid ideas like that, it needs to be shut down utterly and completely, thoroughly. So I don't dislike him personally. Again, I've never heard his name. I've never seen the guy before this interview. And I'm not going to do any research because I couldn't care less who he is or what he represents. But I will stand behind the fact that Natori Karta are evil. They should not be seen or considered in any other way. Because if you do, you end up going down a road of apologetics. It's really that simple. Be strong, stay safe, peace and love.
Leave a like and subscribe.